Pardon me? Oh, Rick said, he talked about referring to Babaji hiding behind a sunbeam. Clearly, he wasn't casting any shadow at that point. So it's written as if they never cast a shadow. But I think it meant more that they can not do it. But I know Swamiji's been asked, and my recollection was similar to what I've answered you, but I need to write it down and ask it.
Metaphor, perhaps? They don't leave a trace?
Yes. Then there's no materiality to their body. But the question is, all the time? You know? It seems peculiar.
Or even if it was just literal or metaphorical.
But no, he made it seem like it was literal.
That
definitely. It's definitely the way it's written. Definitely the way it's written.
You consider Lahiri too, you couldn't get a picture of it. So.
Well, yeah, Lahiri, I mean, talking about not casting a shadow, they would photograph and there'd be a blank spot. So that indicates a great capacity to influence the appearance and the actuality, because Lahiri never, when the photograph was being taken, he didn't disappear. He just made his body transparent, which would be what you would do if you were not casting a shadow. You would still be there, but the sunlight would pass right through you. There are many things that we don't know. And they're just... But what... yesterday, it's... Today, Tuesday? On Sunday, at Sunday service, we were reading out of this book a chapter about Lahiri in honor of his birthday. And he mentions that that which 1,000 years ago was a complete mystery, 100 years ago was a mystery, is now perfectly understood. The time may come when that which is considered miraculous is also understood. So the capacity for him to make his body visible but totally non-material is... they can do a lot. Yeah. Yes?
I think it's in the part where Babaji appears to Yogananda.
Uh-huh.
And he kind of mentions, and he told me other things that would happen to me, the mysterious reference. Do you know, has he revealed any of those things?
I've never heard Swami speak of it. Does anyone else? I don't think so. I mean, that by no means... that doesn't mean at all that he hasn't or didn't, but I haven't heard him. I don't think he said it in my hearing. Yeah.
I had the feeling that it was more personal than you ever noticed.
You definitely had that feeling, but he may have said things to Swamiji that Swamiji hasn't told us yet, or will never tell us. Yeah. I mean, Babaji, the only part of it that Swamiji has talked about is that Master said that Master's actual guru is Babaji. This is just like to make the story more complicated, because, you know, Arjuna, Master was Krishna, Master was Arjuna, and Babaji was Krishna, and that's the true guru-disciple relationship, and that Sri Yukteswar is a stand-in for Babaji. And that's why in various places he speaks of needing Babaji's blessing before he can go and do something. I prayed to Babaji for this or that. And so that meeting in which he saw Babaji could easily have related to that. Swamiji has said at one point that Sri Yukteswar was perhaps Master's soulmate. In the true sense, there is Master in one or two places spoke about the truth of soulmates. Master never talked about it, almost never talked about it, because as he said, people would be looking for their soulmates on every street corner. But Master spoke of the truth that everything in the universe comes in pairs. And there is this pair. When we separate out, we separate out in pairs, and then at some point there's a reunification. But the way Swami described it is that you don't have to be on the same, even on the same planet. You can just reunite in divine consciousness. And I think you don't have to wait for your soulmate in order to be liberated. It was a very important question. You know, you really like partnered like that. And Swamiji said no. So, I mean, this is, you know, this is esoterica, you know, 607 right now. This is just, wow, that's about all I can say. Wow, I don't know anything about it either. Yes, right?
In that same vein, Yogananda goes out of his way at least twice to remark on the startling resemblance physically of Lahiri and Babaji. He really goes out of his way.
Yeah.
And did Swami ever speculate or shed any light on what he feels he meant in that context.
Well, they make their body. I mean, Lahiri incarnated and he just made his body. He could have made his body look like anything.
Sure.
Baba just kept his body for a really long time, but Lahiri just popped into his and then popped out of it again. So it's more likely that Lahiri, when he was coming down, sort of did it as a joke. You know, I mean, what can you say? How do you fathom these things? When I asked Swamiji once, why are all the avatars men? I said, you know, they have a choice about what body they make. So it was just, and he was just saying they have a choice, and that's what they choose. They have their reasons for doing it. Yes,
we would. Isn't it also true that perhaps it's prior to being fully realized, but one has sort of a prototypical body shape and form, and one carries on from incarnation to incarnation, don't we?
I've never heard that before, Rick.
Or is it just then each trip to the astral world resembles the last physical incarnation? But there's definitely some sort of a resemblance that transcends at least two states of life.
But I think it's through the eyes. I don't think it's through the physical form. I've never heard what you just said about the body, because you're a man sometimes, a woman another time.
Yeah.
And you,
in some context, there was a definite resemblance there. I know I've read that.
Mentioned that Sri Teshwar kept his body.
Kept his older form is what it said. Whereas most people take a young body, Sri Teshwar took an older body. And it is implied that you look more or less like you looked in your last incarnation. Well, Kashi did bear a resemblance to his previous incarnation, but Master remarked upon that as if it was not obvious that he would. He remarked upon the fact that he even looked a lot like he'd looked in the last life, rather than, of course, he looked like he looked in the last life. So I think it would depend, Rick, because if you, for example, let's just take a very, you know, a big example. Let's say you were a great big man who was an abuser of women, and you needed to be born as a very weak woman to balance out that bad karma or to experience what it felt like. You know, there would be no apparent resemblance. I had a woman friend who was a teensy, tiny, little, skinny, puny thing, and she always, I mean, a real little one, but she always imagined herself as this great big man. She drew great big cars and things like that. I mean, she was not strong at all, but just somehow she had this remnant of a self-image. And I think that was partly why she was born such a wimp, you know. She just needed to work with something
else.
One
of the things that Master says is that he says that they could even be father and son.
Right. He says they look like they could be father and son.
And, you know, maybe they were soulmates. Maybe they were the same soul.
Well, you're way beyond me, Rick.
I revert back to my other question. Swami never speculated, right?
No, and I've never heard anything even close to that. And see, to my mind, I look at it very differently. Gee, if I could choose anybody in the world, I would just choose to look like the person I like the most. I mean, so if Lahiri was going to have this opportunity to choose a body, he's completely in tune with Babaji, he could just make his body like... Yeah, why not make it like that? And even to hint at the relationship between the two of them or something like that, I don't have a good answer. But yes, your other answer is also not unreasonable. Maybe they're bonded to each other.
My answer really, I guess, was really interested whether Swami had speculated.
No, but I like it. You know, does somebody have a pen? I'm going to see Swamiji in a month, and I actually want to make a list of questions. These are interesting questions. Okay, the question is, why did Lahiri look like Babaji? Okay, why did Lahiri look like Babaji? What was the other one I just said I would ask him? Yes, did Master cast a shadow? And then somebody asked me the obvious question, which I still don't know the answer to, is can you incarnate in the 20th century now and then in the 1700s the next time? Do you incarnate progressively in time? Yeah, I didn't have any answer for it. Okay.
Another little one.
Yeah. No, those were Lahiri's kriyas.
Well, that's something like...
Excuse me.
I'm sure I heard the other...
No, excuse me. It wasn't invented by Master.
No, he presented it.
How much he changed it, though, Rick, is the question. I don't know how much he altered it. Master altered it a little bit from the way Sri Yukteswar taught it.
Really? The second kriya?
No, first kriya. Okay, Master altered the first kriya a little bit. And how much they were altered from what Lahiri, I really don't know. If somebody,
the second Kriya specifically, that I really was living under the assumption that he, that was a unique innovation by Master. That wasn't just something that he learned from his from anyone else.
That's news to me, Rick.
Okay.
Does anyone else know that's true?
Yeah. All I know is
Jaya said that. Take his word for it.
Well, I mean, he just said.
No, take his word for it.
If so, then the four of the Lahiris presents an additional Kriya initiation somewhere. That's all.
That's
actually
why
I've heard that as a rumor from some of the other Kriya teachers that are not with.
I'll put it on the list. There's a whole movement that says that Yogananda is not teaching the real Kriya. There's a whole lot of rumors like that.
But Rick, I remember. Well, I don't want to say because it may not be Kriya Bhavans here. So
no, don't be too exact. Okay. Well, that goes along with what Rick is saying. And of course, Master had a perfect right to, because he may have looked at the situation and realized that what we need is a little different than what the Indians in the last century needed. It's quite possible.
Does the Lahiri's fourth one becomes more intriguing when you think about it?
Didn't you say there was something like 10 Kriyas or something, but you only think of four?
Some people have said that there are 12 stages of Kriya, but it's not.
Obviously, you heard about it, you heard that the ones above and the four come to you in meditation, and you couldn't testify to personal experience.
That's exactly right, Rick. That's what I heard too. Okay. On to subjects of more general interest. John, did you have a question? Did you speak it?
If you're making just a clarification, last time we talked about the fact that Lahiri, for his disciples, asked them not to talk among themselves, and I wondered if actually on the list of Swami had any indication as to why that was. You last time said you weren't really clear why that was, but it wasn't clear if Swami's ever commented on that at all. I don't remember him ever commenting.
The one thing I was thinking, and I was thinking about this at Sunday service, because Sunday was devoted to Lahiri, and I was talking about how long it takes for a new idea to take hold, and how it has to happen in a very gradual process. And it may well have been that, I mean, if you look at it just from an outside point of view, this is not an esoteric reason, this is just a sensible reason. The Kriya had just come out of the Himalayas. It was a time of great transition. There was not a lot of, worldwide acceptance of everything that was going on. And it just wasn't time to really make it very open. It was necessary for individuals to become very rooted and for the power of it to go deep before it could come to the surface. Swamiji has definitely said that people are too fanatical about that thought. There are certain people in Lahiri's line who are just too fanatical about that. And he didn't mean it in such a fanatical way. But Yogananda includes it in his book, so it's definitely a truth. Nothing more comes to me, so it goes on the list. Okay?
Krishna's
soldiers look like Krishna. I think when Swami and I have talked about, and Swami and I and others have talked about the Lahiri things, Swamiji just said it was just because it was the times. It was a progressive thing, and it was just not time yet to make it so open. It had been so secret for so long, it just had to come out by gradual stages. If people were suddenly talking about this very esoteric teaching that they were doing, it would have been too much of a violation of tradition, too much of a, just too much movement for the time. They wouldn't necessarily have turned on him, but it would have desecrated it a bit. I think that was sort of what it was about. It just had to be moved by slow stages a little bit more. That's what I would guess, yeah?
How will we find out the answers to your question?
Well, you'll have to come to the next class series. Dum 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 dum. I might even email you. I'm going to have my computer so I can. That's a very good idea, Stephanie. I'll email. If you're not on our email list, just get on it, because I'll write to you when I'm gone. Okay. Yes, Sharad.
Where did the Krishna code come from?
All of Krishna's soldiers look like Krishna. Where does that come from? I've been saying it for so long. I think it's somewhere from the Gita. Or it's from the I'm not actually sure where it's from, but it's just an aphorism that everybody knows. And of course it means that if you're in tune with the Guru, you begin to resemble the Guru. And you don't necessarily literally look like Krishna, but you do really, because your consciousness is the same. So there becomes an uncanny resemblance. You know, you can usually tell who's from Ananda. You can tell who's from SRF. You can sometimes, if you're really tuned in, you can tell who's from other ashrams. You'll see them and you'll realize, oh, those must be Amici disciples. Those are Guru Mai's disciples, because they look like them.
Yeah.
There's just some quality that comes through. Yes. Yeah.